Welcome to the Unofficial Guide to Partnering. In this podcast, Vince Menzione, a proven industry sales and partner executive, brings together technology leaders in this forum to discuss transformational trends and to deconstruct successful strategies to thrive and survive in the rapid age of cloud transformation. And now your host, Vince Menzione.
Welcome, and in this first interview, I'm joined by Eric Loper, a former colleague from Microsoft who leads Microsoft's National Solution Provider Program. Eric shared his perspective on the evolution of the business, how partners have evolved the model, and new business opportunities emerging from the intersection of big data, Azure, and artificial intelligence. Eric speaks to the attributes of some of the best Microsoft partners and how to best engage his organization. And towards the end of the episode, we dove into Eric's personal and professional journey, his leadership philosophy, role models, core principles, and advice he would give others. Let me read for you Eric's bio. From venture investing to enterprise sales, Eric is a 16-year industry veteran focused on delivering people-centered innovation. In his time at Microsoft, Eric envisioned and built a $39 million customer offer engine, consulted senior leadership on competitive strategy, and pioneered Microsoft's managed partner marketing model. Today, Eric leads the National Solution Provider Program, commonly known as NSP, and is focused on driving revenue with the most strategic U.S. partners. So, Eric, welcome to our podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me today.
Now, it's great to have you here. You and I had the opportunity to work together for several years at Microsoft, and you were a natural first guest for this podcast, given your background and experience in the U.S. partner organization, some of the work that we did together, and your current role. So, you know, for our listeners, explain to them in simple terms what you do at Microsoft.
Yeah, so I will lead a sales team that's focused on working with our top partners. We call those national solution providers. Think about them as, you know, primarily historically, these are the folks that have had services practices. But they're the folks that we're out there co-selling with our customers every day. Where we're trying to use innovation to build Microsoft solutions for our customers that ultimately are going to pull through Microsoft software.
So national solution provider, what does this designation mean? And what does it take for a partner to become one?
It's a great question. So when we think about this group of partners, you can think about them as the group that's been handpicked by Microsoft as our most elite group. As we think about, you know, what does it mean to be a national solution provider, as we look through the process of, you know, how do we do that selection, there's a few things that we look at that you probably would expect. I mean, we're trying to identify the partners that are driving, you know, the greatest degree of scale. We're trying to identify the group of partners that, you know, we feel like have, you know, ultimately have the most connectivity with us. And then the other thing that we're really looking for is leadership. In this world of you know, cloud consumption, there's new things that are happening every day. And that's both advanced workloads that we're landing, and we want partners that are aggressive and are going to lead, and also new monetization models that are landing as well.
That's an interesting point. The last point you mentioned about new monetization models, can you expand on that one a little bit?
Yeah, so I, you know, honestly, I've been a little bit almost shocked to see how fast, you know, we're seeing that happen. There's, you know, some things, the barrier to creating IP has been reduced with the cloud, and so we're seeing models that are landing in that way. As some of the lower level workloads have been commoditized, we've seen partners that have packaged up their services and are landing things as a managed service. There's even some new ways that we're allowing partners to transact. And so, you know, we just tend to see that, you know, we're coming in contact with, you know, customers that are now partners or partners that have evolved their models. And we look at all that as greenfield, new opportunity for us as we think about, you know, adding value and driving connectivity with our customers and our Microsoft field sales force.
So how does Microsoft monetize some of that? And What is the value in the relationship to the field organization with some of that? I think what you're referring to is some of these partners developing solutions, almost like an independent software vendor would. How do you monetize that in your business?
Yeah. So, you know, this is where I feel like, you know, if you think about what maybe what partnering was and where partnering is going, things tend to get really exciting. So if you looked at a partner in the past, you know, a lot of what we were doing is, you know, it was sort of like to unglamorize it. Sometimes it was, you know, we were just driving deployment, right? There was so much that got created through, you know, the work that was done. Think about something like SharePoint. But in its least glamorous faction, you know, that was, you know, like hooking up the washing machine in some cases. And you know, we're always trying to figure out, well, what does it mean to influence and how do we sell together? And so, you know, what you have when you start talking about IP or you're talking about repeatable plays, you can really lock in on that place of where you know you're going to have a scenario where if you repeat a conversation or you repeat, you know, a process or you're able to land a set of IP, you know you're going to have a high value outcome. And so those, when they're designed in the best way, you know, they're designed in a way where everybody's going to win. And so that's a great thing to partner around and something obviously we're really excited about.
Yeah, it sounds it. And so one of the things that makes me think about though, is then, okay, you've got like a solution set or a particular offering that a partner creates that's you new and unique or addresses a particular need within the business. How do you then share that information with the field organization that you support, the US organization in the field?
Yeah, so I would say I'm pivoting my entire business around this. I think it's one thing for us to have a conversation, you know, if you're not familiar with the way that Microsoft is organized, you know, we have within the U.S. we have, you know, a bunch of different districts and a bunch of different, we call them segments, different customer sizes. And so if you're looking at a partner like mine, they want to play in all of those. And you know, we're in that place where you're trying to drive connectivity with, it might be, you know, 15 different teams. It might be 35 different teams. And so going and having a discussion around some of the Microsoft scorecard metrics is actually less interesting than digging in and having a specific conversation to talk about, you know, a set of partners' offers and what they're doing within those, right? So right. For example, you know, a partner that has a solution that leverages, you know, Azure Site Recovery, you know, might be a great entry point in getting a new customer to be thinking about, you know, a product like Azure. And so instead of having a conversation with that field team about, you know, let's talk about the Azure numbers for all these partners, which can be less, telling in terms of what are we really doing together. I'm really focusing my team on having the discussion around those solutions and those offers and how do we go have those scenarios we know are repeatable. How are we working to land those things together? This is very clear what the action is, very clear what the next steps are for them. And it takes the ambiguity out of it. Instead of having a conversation, bring my partner in so that they can ask a bunch of smart questions. We're in a place now where we can, you know in a pretty prescribed way who the customers are that we would want to target, and we can know that we'd have a high value outcome by having the discussion together.
You know, you mentioned scorecard, and I was actually going to ask you a little bit about the scorecard model this year and what the priorities are. What are the top things you're seeing from the business, and how are the partners aligning, these partner solutions that you're talking about, how are they aligning to those, to that scorecard model and what you're tracking for the business?
Well, you know, I think the first thing I would say is that, I mean, partner, right? Partner is emerging. You just think about priorities, and you look at where the investment is going. It's very, very clear that we have to evolve our model. We've been in this sort of sell and yay once every 3 years. And as we move into this world, we need partners. Not that we'll do the, you know, SaaS deployment, that, you know, so much as we need partners that can go and sell advanced workloads in a proactive way. So that's just to say that, you know, at the beginning of the year, there's a number of people that all have their vision in mind for how they could use partners. And part of my job is to really simplify that down to, you know, a core set of things that we're actually going to go and do together. And so, you know, when we think about priorities for the business in Microsoft terms, there's kind of four big rocks that I prioritize my business around. There's a bunch of others that people would love to have happen. But really, there's four. Office 365, we think about, you know, our data platform, primarily SQL. CRM online, and then Azure. Azure is like this Uber category. I would say if you divided those up, Azure probably makes up 50% because there's so much that's baked in there. But those are really the four areas of the business that we're really trying to prioritize partner engagement around. And then we have some maybe nuanced metrics within each of those. So for Office 365, you know, we care about selling net new, and we also care about driving usage. For Azure, we care about selling net new, and we care about driving consumption. Yeah. But if you can get your head around, those are kind of the four big categories for us, knowing that there's other things like, you know, Windows 10 deployments that are also important, that probably give you a feel for what are most people in the field hoping to see when they think about, you know, working with a partner and engaging their customer.
That's a great answer. You know, you had talked about data platform here, and you talked about Azure, and there's sort of a merging of those two. And I know there's been a lot of talk in the industry about artificial intelligence, or some folks call it cognitive computing. And I understand you recently talked about the democratization of AI. Can you tell our listeners more about what AI is and that opportunity specifically for partners?
Yeah. So, you know, having been at Microsoft for a while, I think I'm coming up on 15 years. I am blown away at how fast things are moving. And, you know, when I was asked to speak and listening to some of the things Satya was saying, he was talking about democratizing AI. It sounds like some kind of crazy MIT program, right? It's like, how are we supposed to go sell that to a customer? But when you think about it at its core, there's a lot of it that just, you know, really does feel like it falls into place. And, you know, I think the vision that Satya has shared, you know, continuing to build on the things he said, right? We operate in a mobile, cloud-first world. We know that. We have a set of core priorities, right? We want to, reinvent productivity. We want to build the intelligent cloud. Those are the things you've continued to hear from Microsoft. And then there's this notion of democratizing AI. And if you think about it, we've created a lot of information. It started with, you know, the printing press and then the internet. Everybody hears about the explosion of data, and we've provided all kinds of software that really helps us get to that place where we create information. It's really hard to be able to use that information. And so as we think about the power of the cloud, as we think about, you know, Azure machine learning, as we think about agents, as we think about applications, what we're really trying to do is, you know, take some of those things that used to be impossible and allow people to be able to make intelligent decisions. And really, it's the ability to use that information that Microsoft is really going after. And so what I would say for a partner is that, you know, we've gone from this world where, you know, we're really having a conversation of, you know, is cloud happening or not happening? If you look at all the research, you know, you'll see just even in the last 3 years, you know, how much that agenda has moved. CIOs are saying, you know, really they're moving off of this, you know, conversation around, you know, is it the right thing to do? And they're asking the question, if I do it, what is the value that I'm going to get? Or when I do it, sorry, when I move, you know, what value am I going to see? And so from a partner perspective, really that's where we are looking for individuals that can come in and have the conversation with the customer. And it's an art of the possible discussion, right? It's you used to do business this way based on, you know, this technical agenda. How could we be approaching things differently? And, you know, that's what we're seeing with our customers. When we see these big digital transformation projects, we're seeing customers reinvent the way they work. Sure, that's something we always aspire to. And, you know, I could have given you examples 10 years ago, but the frequency and the cadence and the number that we're seeing, it's pretty astonishing.
You know, we see it every day, right? Everyone uses Amazon, Amazon uses AI on the back end to, you know, prescribe to you what to buy next based on your previous purchases and so on. Where are you starting to see, are there certain tool sets, or I'll call them, kind of pre-built tools or applications that either Microsoft is doing or maybe some of the partners are doing to address certain use cases with AI?
You know, so you're seeing spend that's, you know, really shifting into the line of business. And, you know, I really feel like that's the convergence where you're seeing the things that are starting to come together. And so, you know, I feel like that's where we're starting to see, you know, Azure Machine Learning and, you know, and Hadoop and HD Insights, you know, come together with, you know, SQL Premium, and then, you know, pulling in, you know, even some of those ISV solutions, you know, whether it's, you know, somebody like, you know, a Sprinklr that's, you know, helping you navigate your, you know, your social backend, or even, you know, all the new stuff that's happening with Adobe. So, yeah. I would say that there's a lot happening. And, you know, the bigger picture that we're seeing is just, you know, whereas I was having conversations with customers, you know, 3-4 years ago, and the conversation was, great, if I do this in the cloud, can you tell me about cost, security, and reliability? Today we're seeing, you know, wow, I'm approaching the business in a different way. And, you know, really where maybe we made a mistake in thinking, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, everybody's just going to pick everything up and re-platform it. You know, now we're in this place where it's what's being created that's new, that we're focusing on. And then, of course, if you're going to go build something new, it makes sense, or you're going to have a modernization discussion, it makes sense to be thinking about the power of the cloud.
Yeah. It you know, it sounds like a new dimension you're entering. And I was going to ask you, and I'll still ask you about the NSP program specifically, and like the guardrails and what are the top attributes that you look for from partners. But it sounds like there's a lot of things outside of what you traditionally have looked for these partners to drive. So maybe we could spend a minute on there. I know the program's limited to just a very small subset, but is there a specific attribute or attributes you look for from those partners?
Well, yeah, I mean, first I'll say we are seeing all kinds of new, you know, I'm going to spend next week at the Adobe Summit, and, you know, we're seeing all kinds of new interest from, you know, folks that are in that community, right? Talking to the office of the CMO, whether that's, you know, digital agencies or folks that are you know, thinking about that customer engagement pillar. You know, we have an accounting firm that's working with us. That's developed a set of IP. And so, you know, that's an entirely new market that we have the opportunity to pursue. So we're definitely, it does feel like we're entering a new age. You know, I would say, going back to, you know, what makes a good NSP, I mean, the one thing that's consistent is that, you know, when I'm talking to executives, you know, we have the discussion. So it just go back to like the old Venn diagram from was a geometry.
Yep.
You know, it's the one thing that I will say that remains consistent is, you know, two people sitting across the table from each other trying to figure out how do they find as much common ground in the middle. And so, you know, whereas I think there's been some times in Microsoft where we sort of had this maybe arrogant philosophy, like all the partners that we have, you hear like Gartner proclaim, you know, 50% of your partners are going to go out of business, or 75%. And I think there's challenges with business models, but I think the one thing I've continued to see is that partnering really does come down to that, right? You know, two people looking across the table from each other, trying to figure out how many win-win scenarios you can build. And so when we think about NSP, I mean, that's what we're looking for. How do we find the partners where we have the biggest possible intersection with? And we look at, you know, their scale, right? So my ideal partner would play in every customer segment, you know, be in every geography and drive every one of our key initiatives. And probably if I got to pick my ideal partner, they probably wouldn't work with any of our competitors, right? That would give us 100% overlap in what we were trying to do. Now, that's not possible. So you kind of have to work back from there.
Right.
But as we think about NSP, I mean, that's what we're looking at. And we're looking across the US, and, you know, trying to identify, you know, based on those key priorities we talked about earlier, how do we get the partners that we're going to have the biggest possible overlap with, so that we can invest in probably the most significant way with that set of folks, and be in a place that we'll be able to get, you know, the returns that we would need to justify on that deep investment.
I think one of the things I heard you mention kind of in different ways multiple times was around commitment to Microsoft,
yep,
commitment to the platform. And then certainly scale, because you want a partner that's going to be able to scale and drive the growth and not be limited to just a few opportunities, right? You want to be able to take them across all the segments in the US business. Is that right?
That, Absolutely. And you'd be surprised how maybe simple those things sound, but how many conversations we have about those things. They may sound simple, right? But I mean, commitment's hard. It's not easy. There's lots of opportunities. There's lots of other partners to work with. Or vendors to work with if you're a partner, right? And it's hard to stay focused and be on top of what's happening and, you know, deliver and deal through adversity. And so, you know, whereas those things may sound simple, like, and they come back to probably maybe the ABCs of partnering, I do feel like we live in a day where we have tough conversations about those two things every day.
Yep. You know, it struck me that you sit in a very enviable spot, right? That across the table conversation you get to have with the CEOs of Microsoft's most valuable or valued partners and have those discussions. And also you get to see them peel back the curtain a little bit and find out what they're doing. And that must be very exciting. And then you get to see what makes success and maybe not so much success happen, right? In each of those, right? So can you talk a little bit about that? Like when you think about like in your mind, what the most successful partners have done or do, like, what do you think made them so successful? And, you know, why don't you think that every partner behaves this way? Right. Or do you have that kind of internal conversation with yourself?
Yeah. You know, so it is fascinating. And I do, I mean, thank you. I do feel like I have a great job. It is fascinating to sit and look and watch across, you know, these top 50 partners and see how their leadership teams approach different things and kind of in different ways. You know, I would say, you know, the ones that have been most successful, I mean, if you think back to, you know, the people who you would look back and say, you know, they would be the Microsoft favorite partners. You know, those tend to be the ones that they are. So they're embodying that commitment piece. And so there's a commitment piece and there's an execution. You hit on both of those earlier. And a lot of times, you know, they're thinking about Microsoft almost as much as their customer, as they're thinking about, you know, the customers they're going to market with. And so, you know, you see a difference in how people align in that, right? So I'll give you an example. Management consulting firm that's just completely technology agnostic versus consulting firm that dedicates, you know, 700 people to Microsoft. And you know, one of them is perceived as sometimes we want to sell with them, sometimes we don't. Are they going to bring somebody else in? You know, consulting firm B, right? They're the, you know, partner of each region every single year. You know, and it's just because they've focused and aligned there. On the execution piece, I mean, these are probably the basics, but I mean, you that's the other piece where you see folks fall down. I will tell you in my role, I am shocked at the value of a strong alliance manager. And so if you're an alliance manager, I would say like, I almost think you could do an ROI analysis of, you know, the value that you bring back to the business, both in terms of, you know, things like, you know, incentives and investments, you know, across the company like Microsoft. I feel like a really strong alliance manager, you know, it's kind of like, you know, we talk about a strong seller, right? Being worth their weight in gold. Alliance manager is the face of the company. And I've seen one individual sometimes be the key differentiator and people having, you know, 30, 40, 50% year over year growth. And you know, one individual being the person of seeing declining revenues, and so I think that just speaks to, you know, again, you know, what that there is power in partnering, and there is power in doing that well. And you know, when you are doing that well, and you know, you see the commitment, and you have invested in the right execution, you know, that's where I feel like you see the results and you see the return.
So you're saying the partner investing in a resource, a very strong resource, to drive the alliance, to be the alliance person on the other side of the table from you or involved in the engagement with the field. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately when you think about a partnership, right, there's, you know, people, process, and technology that you have to invest in order to land that. And so, you know, from a people perspective, you know, that's, That's a strong alliance manager. If you're going to be driving activity at scale, you know, that's probably a strong, you know, marketing team that you're going to go in and land that with. You might even need some resources around reporting. You need to figure out how you anchor that process and do that really well. And so, if you want to be, you know, a partner, you know, like one of our NSPs, you have to be able to land a national motion across many different places. Right. And so that's a part of designing that into the culture of your organization. We're going to place some bets together. We're going to be thoughtful and intentional in how we go to market. And then, you know, technology. I mean, what does that look like? How are you going to track revenue? If you're going to be a company that's about scalable marketing, you better be making investments in marketing enabling technology.
Interesting. So marketing, you know, and I know your background was marketing prior to this role. Talk to me a little bit about the marketing aspect of those partners and their ability to invest there. What do you see?
Yeah, so I mean, this is big for us. You know, right or wrong, you know, there's a set of bets that we can make that are, you know, 2-year, 3-year kind of bets. And so that would be an example of do we decide that we want to work with a partner? That's probably a multi-year type of conversation. We're going to build a relationship over time. You know, for Microsoft, you know, we are managing a quarter-to-quarter business with high expectations. And so as we look at that partnership and we look at, you know, how we think about delivering as a company, we really do look as partners as an extension of our Microsoft sales force. And so the question is then, how do you activate that extension? And so, you know, with a group like the national solution providers, it's about landing those scalable motions, you know, across that community. And so sometimes that's in the form of an, you know, investment to go fund services. But sometimes that's in the form of, you know, how do we go build demand? And so part of what we're looking for in a partner, if you think about a partner being able to drive to scale, is being able to have that capacity to do marketing on behalf of Microsoft. And so that's, you know, marketing to their customers, but obviously marketing with a scenario in mind that is ultimately going to drive, you know, adoption of Microsoft technology. And so that's something that I think our best partners are really great at. It's typically harder for partners that don't do repeatable IP. Mm-hmm. You know, some of our partners might have 2 or 3 marketers. If you think about like an ISV, they I remember interviewing NetApp and they had, you know, 450 marketers. Right. And so, you know, as you aspire to drive repeatability, that's where having a really strong marketing engine can come into play and really help you achieve success.
So another success factor in being an NSP. You know, you mentioned the success factors. What about, you know, you've had a strong portfolio of a number of years. You probably have had some partners that have kind of fallen off of the portfolio over time. And what can you say about those, like the ones that kind of tried and failed to work with your organization? Was there one thing you wished you had told them and didn't, or was there something you told them that they didn't listen to? What would you tell them now if you could?
I hope that with my team, we're being, you know, trusted advisors and we're being upfront and candid. We might not always get it right, but you know, that would be the thing that I would say. I always hope that we're leaning in. The ones that I feel maybe the least, the ones I feel the worst about, like they didn't make it, were probably the ones that we weren't able to work with because, you know, they just didn't feel the urgency to move on the cloud. Mm-hmm. Which sounds silly, but you know, 2 years ago, I mean, we were still having that, you know, some of that discussion, right? And you know, really the discussion with them was sort of, you know, hey, once I see the tidal wave hit my front door, then I'm going to activate. And, you know, as great as it is to have capacity, so as great as it is to sit down with a partner and have them say, hey, once I see the demand, you know, man, we'll staff and hire to go meet that. You know, I think we all know, I mean, like, you know, what does it cost for a data scientist today? I mean, it's expensive because they're in demand because the wave is hit, and it becomes very difficult. And so, you know, I would rather have the partner who might be smaller or have less capacity that's willing to lean in and go make a market with us than have the partner that, you know, might say, hey, when the demand hits, you know, and the, when the market has been made, you know, then we're going to jump in. And so, you know, we could maybe agree to disagree, but as we think about our investments, that's what's most important to us.
Yeah. And as you watched it, you know, from somebody who was in the inside with you, it happened pretty quickly. Like you said, the tsunami, it really kind of, it built up momentum. We talked about it for quite some time, but once it hit hard.
I'm astonished. Honestly, I remember a time at Microsoft, we were all wondering, right? Like, hey, are we going to be in a scenario where, you know, we can justify all the people we have because there's a different monetization model for the cloud. I don't know the exact numbers, but I think that the US has shifted from like a 15% revenue mix to like a 60% cloud revenue mix in just a handful of years.
Wow.
I can remember a $13 million Azure quota, right? And now we're trying to drive $1 billion. And that's, again, just a handful of years. So it has absolutely been something that's fast. And I would say, you know, that's the industry. It continues to accelerate, right? I mean, I remember on an NT replacement campaign, right? We would have, you know, 18 months to know that a new product was coming. We're in a place now where, you know, we'll have a product launch. We didn't know about it. And it's the difference maker in our quota in the last 3 months of the year, because we're selling it that fast. Like, it's hitting and we're selling it, you know, within 30 days. And it's, you know, not just like, you know, selling the pilot car. I mean, we're selling actual solutions to customers that are making a difference in terms of, you know, what we're able to deliver from a sales perspective. So yeah, I'm astonished. I think it's going to continue to be this way, where things are going to continue to accelerate. And so I think if you're a partner and you're not thinking about agility, or you're not thinking about leadership, you know, then that's where, you know, you have to be concerned. I meet with the partners who I don't think are going to make it. And you know, those are some of the things that, most of the time it's not being aggressive enough.
You know, you mentioned that, you know, all the new products. I remember one time the discussion about, you know, 500 new features in Azure last year. How do you keep the partners up on the technology, enabled and able to deliver? What do you do from an enablement perspective there?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll just start by saying it's hard. I would have considered myself a mid-level Azure expert, at least comfortable walking into a CIO of a large company and having an Azure discussion, you know, maybe 3 years ago. You know, I look now and I personally do struggle for, you know, what does that look like and how do I just, you know, stay on top of what's happening from an industry perspective? There's some basics, right? I mean, I for me personally, I'm focused on, you know, podcasts and, you know, read Scott Guthrie's blog. I mean, I think those are some of the basics, especially if you're really technical and you want to stay on top and stay super deep. As we're thinking about enabling our partners, we've really prioritized in two ways. So one is we have a concept where, you know, we're looking to make a set of depth investments where we'll bring somebody on to think about, you know, how do we build out, we'll call it a practice or a solution, right? So it can be like data and analytics. Let's focus on data and analytics for the next 6 months and really figure out how we go deep there from both the technology readiness, but also all the way through to, you know, how do we go sell and land that? So, you know, that's one piece. And the other piece is that we have a set of communities. And so this would be a great way if you were thinking, you know, you were a leader of one of our partners and you were thinking about, you know, how do I make sure that, you know, my person who is thinking about, you know, connected selling or my person who is thinking about data and analytics is up to speed. I can't remember how many we have. I think it's like 14 or 18 different communities that are staffed by a different team. And that's where you'll hear the latest set of updates, right? This is what's happening. Here's the latest training. Here's how you stay up to speed. And so I would kind of, if I was sitting down with a partner, I might be thinking about it in terms of, you know, a couple of those different pieces. You know, one is where do we want to focus and how do we go deep? Two is what's the breadth set of resources that are there every day for you to consume? And maybe the last one might be, you know, are there certifications or competencies that you want to try and drive across your organization, you know, to make sure that, you know, you're doing that kind of right long-term work, so that you'll have folks that are, you know, capable and understanding, you know, what the latest technology is.
As you enter fiscal year 18, how do you see the priorities shifting or changing? And also, Microsoft is instituting a new worldwide partner conference called Inspire this year. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so you know, there's been a lot of changes. I mean, we're evolving and moving fast, and I think you saw some of those on the front end with, you know, with Satya and what he drove in terms of our engineering. And you're seeing, you know, those changes now with, you know, JPC and Judson and, you know, guys like Chris Weber who are really stepping up. If you don't know them, you know, they're just all people who've been in the trenches, in the field, closing deals. And so, you know, you're seeing, you know, a lot of shift in how we think about, you know, those events and bringing things together. I think Inspire this year will probably feel a lot like WPC has in the past. I think as, you know, we move forward and you start thinking about kind of all of the different pieces between, you know, Ignite and Microsoft Sales Conference and, you know, WPC and Inspire, you know, I think you'll continue to see those strategies evolve over time. I think they're headed in a great direction. As I'm thinking about next year and, you know, we're thinking about, you know, what's important there. You know, I think the biggest thing is we continue to shift towards consumption. And consumption, if you think about it, you know, if you're thinking about dollars coming in over months, it's hard to make up in June. We've spent a lot of our time in the past closing big deals in June. We got to close really big deals in July and August now. So that's what I would say, you know, where do we really need to help? You know, we got to start now so that we can set ourselves up for that fiscal year as we think about what that looks like moving forward. And so, you know, whatever your relationship is with Microsoft, I mean, that's where we need to help. That's where we need to be intentional is how do we make sure that we're doing the right thing so that, you know, we can leverage the platform and get people using it, get people consuming it, since they're going to only pay us if they use it.
Great advice for our partners of all types. So thank you very much for that, Eric. So, you know, we spent a lot of time on partners that have been successful, not successful. Let's focus a little bit on you and, you know, how you got here, right? So how did Eric get started? And tell us about your personal and professional journey. Talk us through it.
Yeah. Life of Eric. All right. Happy to share. You know, it's interesting to think about starting out. I mean, I would say I'm, you know, still have some road to go as I think about my career. You know, I kind of feel like there's been two big inflection points for me. I started my career in venture capital, which really was, you know, I took an unpaid internship in college and did a bunch of research for, you know, a group of people that were in the venture industry that eventually came together. And was kind of one of the first five that started a venture capital firm. You know, great opportunity to really understand the landscape of, you know, technology and, you know, what that kind of early stage investment looked like, good opportunity to learn from a group of really smart people. And then after 9/11, you know, the funding environment, got really, really tight, especially where I was in Santa Barbara. And so I knew that I needed to look for something else. And really in a lot of ways kind of had to reinvent myself and start over. So I was a great technology analyst, but there wasn't a lot of need for that. And so I came on board at Microsoft and started as a vendor. So, you know, I basically spent a year going through the process of, you know, building credibility and building relationships, and then pitched the idea of a potential job. So I basically kind of wrote the business plan for how I thought that Microsoft should be doing its investments around proof of concepts, around field empowerment, and then around their broad volume license rebates. Luckily enough, I was able to sell my way in, and I've been here for a little while now.
I want to make sure I understand this. You came in as a vendor, so you were hired. That's right. You were hired in, you know, kind of a paid hand. We used to call them V-dashes. You probably still do.
That's right. And yeah, one year contract. You know, take out the trash, crunch spreadsheets.
Yep.
Fulfill book requests. I mean, it was pretty tactical.
So it sounds like you took your investment experience, your financial acumen, and applied it to this partner business model. Is that what I think I hear here?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it was, you know, being able to write a plan, right? And what's the strategy? How do you, I saw a need and was basically able to pull all that together into a vision, for both the role, ultimately ended up being a team, that was created around, you know, a set of investments around the process that supported those investments, the technology that needed to support those investments, and then the people that would be needed to support those investments. So, in that sense, it was actually, you know, leveraging the bridge, right? It's like, you know, living in the world of consultants and then being able to take that consulting expertise and then bring it to Microsoft.
Nice. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, what aren't you very good at? Put another way, what do you most often delegate to others?
Yeah, you know, I would say large blocks of time managing details. That, like, I realized really a big believer in managing to your strengths and you know what StrengthsFinder and you know, some of those other assessments bring to the table. And you know, for me, you know, taking a, you know, building a vision, you know, working on what the strategy is for that, and then bringing it to life, you know, just kind of like my first role at Microsoft, you know, that's where I get a lot of my energy. That's what gets me fired up in the morning. I am just not great at, you know, large blocks of details. And so, you know, this morning for me, that was, you know, I was thinking through the process of, you know, knowing that I'm going through a process of hiring. And so I was thinking through that process and each of the candidates. And this is an example of something I couldn't delegate, right? I had to force myself to know, hey, I've got to think through, you know, each of these candidates and understand how they are ultimately going to be, you know, based on, you know, what I know, you know, and the criteria that I have for the role. And so, you know, that's an example of something I had to just say, you know for myself, okay, I have to go through this. But, you know, when it comes down to that, you know, pulling lots of details together and, you know, I'll tend to put that stuff off, right? It'll go like 2 months by before I, you know, send the email that I need to send. So I have to be very strategic about making sure that, I do try to block off time and that I'm thoughtful about the areas that I can delegate.
What was the best piece of advice someone gave you?
Well, you know, I think for this particular role, I remember going down this path and, you know, one of my mentors said, you know, you're going to understand when you walk away from this role, the power of relationships. And at the time, I mean, it sounds like such like kind of sales fluff, right? It's like, okay, that sounds so trivial. But then, you know, going back to that commitment discussion that we had earlier, you know, you really realize how much is pivoted around relationships in terms of, you know, the investments people make and the actions that they take. And so, you know, that recognizing that power and understanding it and how to harness it and how to invest in it has been the thing I think that has been a great, you know, learning area for me. But just being intentional with it is something that, you know, I look back on and I thought, man, that's really, it sounded so simple at the time. Now it actually seems kind of profound.
Do you have any role models? And if so, what advice or attributes did you learn from them?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I feel like the older that I get, the further down the path that I go, the more people I have speaking into my life. So I don't know what that said about my 20-year-old self, but it's, you know, I laugh now, right? I mean, I've got like a life coach and, you know, a group of people we kind of try to speak into each other's lives and, you know, then a set of mentors for each of the key issues or each of the key things that I'm focused on. I would say, you know, I've learned from a number of different people and different facets, right? I try to think about mentors. There's some people that are just great at everything, but more likely there's people who've harnessed in on one thing specific. So, you know, there was a time when I became a people manager for the first time and I tried to find the best people manager that I could, you know, to really coach me in being great in that. But if I had to pick one thing that just kind of stood out as profound to me, you know, it's, you know, really understanding how important it is to care for people in an authentic way. You know, I think as a leader, as somebody who's working with partners, as somebody who is, you know, driving change in the organization, I feel like if you can do that effectively, if people feel like you're authentic in stewarding their jobs, their partnerships, their investments, if you're authentic in that, then when the gnarly, big, difficult things come, they're just a lot easier to skate around.
So what advice would you give your 20 or 25 year old self then, Eric?
Yeah. As I described him, I came to Microsoft at an earlier age. I don't actually remember exactly how old I was, but I think I was 24, 25. And I can remember, you know, almost every job that I had for the longest time, I think I was like the youngest person on my team. And I just remember sometimes that feeling so daunting, right? You know, wishing that you had, you know, maybe all the skills. Obviously, I had a lot of confidence, which is why I'm still here and why I feel like I've been able to achieve some things, you know, while at Microsoft. But, you know, over time, as I've had sort of the lens to reflect, and then even to see the people who I've hired into Microsoft grow and develop, you know, I think I've just really come to be a big believer in the fact that people are capable of amazing growth. So if I was a 20-year-old, if I was advising my 20-year-old self, I'd probably just be, you know, reminding them that, you know, it's not what's not usually most important is the raw ingredients that you have to work with. It's more about the commitment to perfect your craft. And if you can really embody that mindset of, you know, knowing that you're capable of growth and knowing that it's about perfecting your craft, then when the difficult things come, then when you have the bumps or you're discouraged, you can lean into them because they're an opportunity to learn. You can lean into the fact that, hey, this is difficult, but I'm going to walk away from this, you know, having learned something that I'm going to take with me. And this is going to help me as I look to make those steps to perfect my craft. So that's, I think, if I was going to go back and reflect, I think that would be the one thing that you know, I'd want to focus on. And I probably would have a lot more people speaking into my life.
Microsoft can be a complex company to either work for or engage with. And is there one thing that we don't teach partners or employees at Microsoft, but you believe is true to success with Microsoft?
So there's the simple, right? The simple is like, hey, you know, you're sort of going to get in what you put out of it. I would say, I think for a lot of partners, what they hear is like this sort of endless opportunity. Maybe they hear somebody like me talk about the Venn diagram. And so they want to like go and do everything. I do feel like in this world, focus is just really important. And there's a lot of things to focus on. But, you know, I think for partners, you know, picking a couple of big bets and doing those really well and really standing out in those things is a great way to approach it. And sort of going back to the enablement discussion that we had, right? Like picking a couple of things to really, you know, dig in and invest. I think sometimes I see partners that are just trying to do too much, and maybe not being great at any one thing. And, you know, people at Microsoft probably wouldn't tell you, hey, you know, stop, right? We want your investment and sprinkled across everything. But the partners that I think are most successful are the ones that have been really able to dig in and focus. And by the way, you know, focus too, just in terms of, you know, the number of relationships. You know, I think for some partners, that's part of their challenge, right? They've got so many relationships and they're all growing and there's such explosive opportunity, you know, that it just becomes really hard. If you have a catalog of, you know, 15 different vendors that you're working with, and then, you know, a couple of those are cloud vendors with a couple thousand offerings underneath them, you're going to find that, you know, you're capable of probably doing a lot, but you probably won't have a lot of synergy in any one place. And you may end up ultimately finding that, you know, you're getting less from your customers because you're not really an expert in anything.
I know you work out of the Bellevue office, which is sort of the U.S. headquarters, as opposed to the Redmond campus. If you had the opportunity to own a billboard facing the building, near the building.
And, I like this question already.
Yeah. So, and then everyone coming to work would see that billboard. What would you post on it?
So my first thoughts, probably would say fantastic workplace. Well, a couple things. I mean, one, I think you got to set a vision for people to believe it. I would say Microsoft's a great place to work. It's not the only place. You know, there's lots of things that I would look at about Microsoft and say, gosh, that's not perfect or not attractive. But if I was thinking about what's most important, and I think about what's sort of at the heart of my values as a leader and what do I aspire for, I think that's really a big part of it. I think there's a lot of success we can go and achieve, but, you know, it really starts with, you know, driving that in a missional way, right? How do we make this a fantastic place to work? How do we take and chart and drive our own destiny versus, you know, what's being handed to us? Some of it may be aspirational. Some of it may be, where I feel like we're at today. But if I had to pick, you know, one thing that I'd want everybody to be both focused on and aspiring and looking to appreciate, that's probably what I would focus on.
And is there a quote that you live by or you think of often?
Yeah, so for me, I there's probably a bunch. What I would say more for me, I sort of have a life statement, right? Which is, you know, I want to focus on, you know, living each day intentionally, you know, without fear, with a spirit of, you know, power, love, and self-control to leave a legacy in the lives of others. So that's something that's, come from a couple different places. There's actually a verse in the Bible that has been important to me, but you know, that's my focus. My focus is, how do I make sure that I'm waking up every day, that I am living without fear and the things that I'm pursuing? Trying to make sure that as I look at both these partners and I look at my team, that I'm investing in a way that, you know, we would look back, that people would feel like it's, been profitable and I've been able to help them be successful, and that we could, you know, think about that as a legacy that we both created together.
And then a question I also have about, you know, what you're reading, like when you have free time. I know how busy you are with the work you do, but is there any one book you've read recently or one that you would recommend to our listeners?
Yeah. And I'm working on the reading piece. I'm headed down the path of, I'm going to try audiobooks. I've been a huge, huge podcast consumer, so I'm excited to consume this one as well. But I think there's two books that I'm reading right now that I feel like have been, both really helpful. Just, you know, again, for me, it's about being intentional, just because I feel like, you know, there's so few moments. I get to the end of the day fast every day. So the first is Turn This Ship Around, which is a really interesting book that, you know, really keys in on this principle of, you know, what does it mean to empower your people? Which, you know, if you think about kind of a lot of times in the military, you know, that's, you know, you're given orders and you follow orders, and that's what it means to be a good soldier. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, empowering people, right, to come to you and say, you know, this is what I intend to do. And if you can build that into your organization, you know, I think that you can make everybody leaders. And so that's something that's really been a part of my leadership philosophy that's been important to me. The other one, called Living Forward, is a book that's more about being intentional across your life and all of the things that you pursue. I know it's gotten some really big accolades out there from folks like Tony Robbins. But just for me, as I think about, you know, I only get, like I said, each day I only get a few moments to steward. And I just want to make sure that, you know, I am being intentional, and I'm being intentional across my life, and making sure that, as I'm investing, that each of those things is accruing to kind of the bigger picture where I'm trying to go.
So Turn the Ship Around and Living Forward, and we'll put links into the show notes here so that people can find those books on Amazon. And then, you know, I know we're running close to the end of time here, but I did have one kind of final question, and it's about a story that I know you told me, but I thought it was kind of a really cool story about you and Bill Gates. And I was wondering, I thought I'd surprise you with this one at the end and ask you if you wouldn't mind recounting that story for our listeners, because I thought it was kind of fun.
So after being in the venture capital community and kind of going through that process and, you know, moving from, you know, kind of intern to analyst to manager in a pretty short period of time, I moved to Seattle, was a little short. I was consulting for a company in LA, but it was contingent on helping them raise money. And so I got to the point where I realized I needed to wait tables in order to make ends meet. And I think the week that I accepted an offer at Microsoft, Bill Gates came into the restaurant. So nice. Everyone in the restaurant knew that I was leaving to go to Microsoft, and they were all convinced that I needed to go and introduce myself to Bill as his latest employee. And so I ended up serving him soup. I decided that wasn't the best way to meet him. So we didn't have a lengthy discussion. But you know, the funny thing about it was just recognizing that, you know, I mean, he's a person, right? Like, he's a guy who goes home and, you know, brings his family out to dinner to, you know, California Pizza Kitchen and has soup in his lacrosse shirt.
Nice.
So, you know, very coming into Microsoft, it was just a good realization that, you know, he's human, we're all human. And you know, Bill Gates is such a, you know, industry defining figure, you know, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, he's somebody who did work to, you know, perfect his craft, and he found a good opportunity and a good moment, and he's been able to do a lot of things. He still eats dinner with his family at California Pizza Kitchen.
And so you didn't try and sneak a note into the soup or into the dish.
No. Yeah. Spell it out in Frito chips or something.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to work for you. I just kept thinking, I'm going to meet this guy someday later. And he's, I'm going to want to be like the guy, hey, I'm the soup guy.
Yep.
So I decided that maybe wasn't the best for him.
And thanks again for joining.
Absolutely. And thanks for having me on. We miss you at Microsoft. I'm excited for the value that you can bring to this community. I'd love to participate again. And I'm excited to be a listener and a consumer myself.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Unofficial Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Minzione, online at unofficialguidetopartnering.com and facebook.com/unofficialguidetopartnering. We'll catch you next time on The Unofficial Guide to Partnering.